This is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. There we go. Our connection this hour was made in an apartment in New York City where two roommates, a gay lawyer and a straight interior designer, made TV history. I'm talking, of course, about Will Truman and Grace Adler of the sitcom Will and Grace. The show debuted in 1998, and many called it groundbreaking for the way that it portrayed LGBTQ characters. Well, the cast got together last year to film a short sketch encouraging people to vote, and they found that their chemistry was still there and they wanted to work together again. So now the show is making an official return to TV tomorrow evening after 11 years, and the reviews are mixed. We'll talk about those, but a few questions for you. Should a show that was considered fresh for the way it handled LGBTQ issues in its day attempt to make a comeback when the landscape has changed, when we're in a different America? Does the show deserve the credit it often gets for educating the American public about gay culture? Even former Vice President Joe Biden credited the show for its role in that. So this hour, we'll talk about the legacy of Will and Grace and also some of the criticism it has faced over the years. Plus, we'll talk about how LGBTQ characters have been portrayed on screen throughout history and how that continues to evolve. We'll have some fun this hour with my guests. Scott Fearing is the executive director of the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley. Welcome back, Scott.
It's wonderful to be here. Looking forward to this discussion.
Also in studio, my colleague Juan Vasquez, the digital engagement facilitator for WXXI News. Hi, Juan.
Hi. It's great to be here. I've been here all day.
Well, welcome to this room of the building. And what Juan is talented in tech is only surpassed by his knowledge of television and pop culture. So he is here to talk about every TV show ever created. And joining us in just a few minutes is Kate Sweeney. She's the co-organizer of Ambush Rochester, and she'll tell us about that when she gets here. But listeners, I'd like to invite you to join this conversation. We want to hear your thoughts on Will and Grace and about how LGBTQ characters are portrayed in the media. The number here is 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And I'm also on Twitter at MMacMedia. And we've seen some feedback already come in, so we'll be sharing your comments this hour. But I'd like to start with Scott and Juan and talk about the credit that Will and Grace sometimes gets for breaking new ground. Do you think it deserves that credit? In other words, there were shows and films that featured gay characters before Will and Grace, but the show's fans tend to argue that Will and Grace was the first show to treat gay characters as real people, to normalize them with real relationships and not just laugh lines or set pieces. Do you agree?
In a way, yes. I think that it was the first show that actually, It showed gay characters in pretty much, you know, just everyday, you know, situations and conversations. And I think shows before that, and maybe Scott will agree, but there's a lot of shows before that where the gay character was mainly there for comedic effect and in some ways a punchline too. And they would always, you know, hype up a bit of the sexual orientation of that character. And this was the first show that actually, I mean, you would find episodes that did not deal with any of the sexuality of the characters at all. And that was a lot of the plot line in the show was just their everyday life. Sometimes there'd be relationship stuff in there. Sometimes there'd be the jokes that'd be thrown in there. But a lot of what the plot was basically everyday life. Oh, by the way, Will and Jack just happen to be gay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, we got to remember that the year before Will and Grace started, Ellen DeGeneres came out on her show, and that ended her show.
NBC
with her
canceled
out. Canceled it, yeah. So it really was a huge thing for them to be suddenly doing a show with gay characters as the lead characters. Now, there'd been, you know, lots and lots of previous shows, and I can get into some of that later on, that had gay characters, and some of them were treated respectfully and weren't just the punchline. Mm-hmm. But this was the first one where the lead characters were mm-hmm. out as gay men. And, you know, again, later on we can get into all the challenges. I remember when Eric McCormick was cast as Will, and there was a lot of gay people very upset that they put the straight man in as a gay man, and why not hire a gay actor? And, you know, then the gay actor, Sean Hayes, was so over the top effeminate and flamy, and was more the comic sidekick. And so there were great discussions in the community at that time. But again, I did see great social change happen during those years that the show was running.
The mid-90s were a bit of an experimental time as well. You had the topic of gay rights starting to percolate again. You had shows that were, in a way, experimenting with gay characters again and trying to figure out, in a way, how to use them and what would be the audience reaction. So you brought up the Ellen Show. Another one was Roseanne.
Mm.
Roseanne did the lesbian kiss episode. So that happened. That happened as well. And so poor ABC, had to deal with this twice, and they canceled one show over it. But there was a lot of media portrayal into, and thank goodness there wasn't, huge 24-hour news as there is now, about those episodes. So it was the Ellen coming out episode and then the lesbian kiss that was going on Roseanne.
Well, and Roseanne had the lesbian kiss, but mm-hmm. Friends had the lesbian wedding with Winona Ryder and Jennifer Aniston, and they weren't allowed to kiss.
Yeah.
So they had the wedding, but there was no none of that hanky-panky stuff.
And before that, Seinfeld had the mention of a lesbian wedding that Elaine was going to. And then they talked about that, without the characters that were being married there, but she was talking about it with the woman on the subway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She says, I came on the subway for 40 years. I don't talk to anybody. Now I do, and I get the best man at a lesbian wedding. So,
and keep in mind that a lot of this was starting way back in the 70s. And again, I can name off a couple of examples. The one right now that I'll mention was the show in 1975 called Hot L Baltimore. It was hotel, but the E was burnt out, so it was Hot L Baltimore. And they were the first series that had a gay couple in the series that wasn't just for comic relief. And so things were starting in the 70s, and then when AIDS hit in the 80s, there was this massive sort of turn where the portrayal of gay was primarily about victims and people dying. And it was a necessary conversation, the most famous one being Early Frost with Aidan Quinn in 85, I believe it was, that really began this conversation around HIV and AIDS and what it meant to the gay community.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to me to think about NBC's decision-making as Ellen was being canceled and then the decision to go forward with
Ellen was ABC. So that was a different network.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, thank you for that. Well, let's look at the landscape in general. Mm-hmm. So one major network cancels a show featuring someone who is gay. And then NBC, and this, I heard this story only last night through a Will and Grace special that Scott told me about. So listeners, if you're interested, it's a Paley Center special looking at Will and Grace. It's about 45 minutes long. You can find it on YouTube. But the two producers of the show, we're talking about how the show got the green light. They were sitting in, I think it was Warren Littlefield's office at NBC.
Yeah, their pitch, their mock pitch.
Yes, their pitch. And they had Will and Grace buried in another pile of ideas that they had. And Warren Littlefield said, "You seem really excited about this lawyer and his roommate and the gay lawyer and the straight interior designer. Yeah, go write that. Go do that."
Yeah.
So it seemed like such an easy decision for NBC.
Yeah.
And when you think about it in the context of Ellen being canceled, it's just, I suppose it's one network over another, but the landscape seemed to be making a change.
And you have to wonder also how much of that was NBC sitting there saying, "We're number one right now. We can pretty much throw anything on and see if it's a hit or not." They could take the chance. CBS was buried in the ratings. ABC was, I believe, second at the time. So it was more of a, you got to think about that in a sense. It's like, did NBC actually have the flexibility to say, "Yeah, okay, let's go with that. Let's see what happens." Where maybe another network went in touch, especially ABC after you canceled Ellen and they got backlash for it. So, ABC wasn't going to try it again. CBS is pretty conservative, at least at that time, was pretty conservative. I didn't think they were going to take the chance. So really NBC at that time, because Fox was just really still nascent at the time, was about the only place that they could probably find a home for something like
that. And wasn't Thursday night their big comedy
and
must-see TV night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and for the younger listeners, just realize that in those days, if you weren't home on that night to see the series, there was no chance to go stream it later because you missed the show.
That was your VCR was had to be set.
Well, yes.
Truly instrumental viewing. Actually, related to that, we just got a text from a listener named Joel who says the show was already renewed before its first episode aired. So I haven't read that myself, but I trust Joel, and good for NBC because it worked out very well for them. I know we mentioned a little bit about the character of Jack McFarland and the way that Sean Hayes played him. And Do you think that that was stereotypical in a way that was a disadvantage to the show? Or do you think that that character benefited the show other than comedic effect? Juan, that's something that you were talking about at the top.
I think that's more of a question of what was the intent of the character from the start. Was it to be that flamboyant character, or was he supposed to be something else? I mean, I really do think that, I guess, that was the intent from the start, or else they probably wouldn't have casted Sean Hayes at all on that. But it seemed to work out well, and it was that counterbalance. And you always see that in sitcoms. You always got to have that counterbalance somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it just seemed to be that, like, they, you know, he and Karen were sort of that counterbalance to Will and Grace. If you had the same couple on the other side, it probably wouldn't have worked.
Wouldn't have worked, yeah. I know many gay men who were really put off by Jack's behaviors, others who sort of embraced it and said, isn't it wonderful to finally be okay being that flamboyant and out there and funny and witty and clever and all that other kind of stuff. So it was pretty controversial. Again, in the 90s, I was doing workplace education on LGBT issues, trying to get workplaces to put domestic partner benefits in place. We hadn't even really started the marriage debate hardcore yet. And I bet you every single workshop I did between, well, the launch of the show in 98 and 2006 or 7, every single workshop, somebody would bring up Will and Grace. They talk about the difference between Will and Jack. And, you know, everybody understood Jack as a gay man, but the Will piece would surprise people sometimes. Mm. You know, he didn't look that way or act that way. So I think there's that dynamic that needs to be taken into account.
Well, let's listen to a clip from the show. This is a scene in which Jack receives a gift from Will for his birthday. It happens to be a Cher Barbie doll. And Will and Grace get upset that Jack has a special seat for the Cher doll, and they get annoyed and they call him crazy or something, and they leave. And then here's what happened next.
You know, dude, it is a little weird that you're talking to my doll.
I don't think I need a drag queen to define normal behavior. But I will say this, the look is flawless.
Whatever.
Ooh, working the attitude. Okay, you're good.
I've had a lot of practice.
Hey. You're not that great, Mr. Sister. All right? I do a better share than you.
You think so?
Actually, it's... You think so? Ho! If I could turn back time.
So that's Chuck MacFarlane meeting Cher and Will and Grace. And I'd like to welcome Kate Sweeney to the studio.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. She is the core organizer of Ambush Rochester. And Kate, you joined at a perfect time because we're talking about a very fun clip, of course. And as funny as that is, there was some backlash about some of the things said in that clip, and Will and Grace has been criticized for the way that it treated transgender issues. And Scott and Juan, that's something that we talked about offline, but Kate, have you heard any of that criticism? Do you have any thoughts on that issue?
I've heard some of that criticism, and even while the show was on, I could hear some of that criticism. I have a little bit of a different perspective, because when the show came out, I had just come out, and I was 18, and for me, it was actually... you would hear people saying that out in the community anyway. So it seemed like something that was depicting a little portion of life that I had now just entered into. And so it never bothered me because it seemed like something that was happening. And it was obviously in jest and, you know, it wasn't in a derogatory manner. And honestly, in the community at the time, it's a lot of the way that a lot of people talked about it. Mm-hmm. And that was brought forward.
Yeah. That episode, which was season 3, which was 2000 at the time. I mean, think about the issues that were going on at around that time. I mean, there were still, you know, fight for gay rights at that time. So anything with transgender issues at that time, it was awfully quiet at that time, not like it is now. So it's hard to take something that aired in 2000 and then try to apply it now. Mm-hmm. It's a completely, you know, it was at a completely different time that you can't apply it right now. What this next season will bring? Okay, we don't know. We don't know what the next season's going to bring. We don't know what they're going to touch on in this next season.
Well, Deborah Messing has spoken out a little about that already, and let's see if I can find that quote from her. She said, "When we started, it was revolutionary to have two gay characters. We were LGB, but we stopped at B. My hope is now that we can finish the alphabet." So we'll see what happens beginning tomorrow night. Some feedback already on Twitter. Eric on Twitter says, "The show is groundbreaking. Yes, some of its social treatment hasn't aged well, but so far, as a first-time serious viewer, it treats everyone well." So that's to echo what Juan was saying. Do you agree that the show's role in educating the public about LGBTQ issues is deserved? Kate, what do you think?
I do believe that it's deserved because I feel like it came at a very important time for gay culture and the gay movement, and it made it that it brought it to the everyman. It wasn't a show about, like, there were episodes like when Jack came out to his mom or other things that were very, you know, relatable to the, but mostly it was just, here's four friends. Two of them happen to be gay. They're very funny. You know, here's the gay best friend. And that's what it was centered around. And at the time when the show came out, I'm sure Scott can back me up here. At the time, it was 50% of the country that was thought that being gay was wrong. That was the number at that time.
At least.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Potentially even more. And again, I was busy doing workshops and in-services already by then. I was much more than 18 already.
I was 19.
But, you know, again, what I saw happen, and the vice president's comment really said it well, it was this huge opportunity to get America talking and to understand LGBT folks. And again, when I'd be in a workshop, I'd be talking, you know, I remember one specifically at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and there was this debate broke out in the room about the characters on Will and Grace. I was at a slight disadvantage because I didn't own a TV between 1996 and 2005, so I never watched the show. As I said, there was no way of streaming it for most of the show's lifetime. So, but now in retrospect, going back, but I feel like I know the show because so many people talked about it so often in those workshops. And I know it got people talking. It got people comfortable with the words. Again,
it started the conversation.
Started the conversation. Again, historically, looking at how a conversation started in the 70s, 80s changed everything with HIV and AIDS, stopped a lot of conversations, demonized, villainized, you know, turned us into nothing but a disease. And then suddenly, as we're moving into the 90s, things start to change again, start to come out. And then, as we've already talked about with Friends and Ellen, and actually even in the real world with Pedro Zamarro in 94 coming out as HIV positive and gay on that show on MTV, pretty monumental changes.
Well, we've referenced former Vice President Joe Biden's comments a couple times. I do have that audio that we can listen to. So this is Joe Biden on Meet the Press in 2012, and this was a discussion they were having about same-sex marriage. But here's what he had to say about Will and Grace.
My measure, David, and I take a look at when things really begin to change, is when the social culture changes. I think Will and Grace probably did more to educate the American public than almost anything anybody's ever done so far. And I think people fear that which is different. Now they're beginning to understand. They're beginning to understand that this is a space.
So it normalized so much of what was, what did you say, Scott, more than 50% of the country, or maybe it was you, Kate, thought that being gay was quote unquote wrong. And
right. Not even that they weren't in support of it or anything else. We weren't even to that. It was that they thought it was wrong, mm-hmm. you know, right. That they were not in favor of it in any way, shape, or form.
Well, again, you got to look that up until 1973. The DSM, the official diagnostic manual for mental illness, said it was a mental illness.
Right.
And so by, you know, early 70s, you're starting to have that gets removed and there's starting to be some conversations again. We're starting to see some people showing up on television and some characters occasionally, you know, Jody on soap, things like that, that are starting to address the issues. And then suddenly illness, true illness, hits the community so hard. And so people are going back to that, oh, must be wrong, illness, sickness, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I also want to throw in, I was talking to our education coordinator before I left the office today, and they were out doing a workshop yesterday outside of town here by couple hundred miles, actually, and they had a really difficult experience in a very rural school district where the principal, they originally had been contracted to come in and do work with middle school and high school. They ended up pulling the middle school folks, requiring a written permission slip from the high school students in order to hear about LGBT issues. There was a great amount of opposition to their conversation yesterday. So there
it was yesterday.
Yesterday. So there are still challenges out there.
Wow.
And that here in New York, you know, a story like that, usually we'd expect to hear coming out of, let's be stereotype here, somewhere in the South or somewhere with less information, but right down the street by a couple hundred miles.
Are you hopeful that the show will be able to continue its freshness? Do you think there's hope for that? Or I know Linda Holmes on NPR this morning, she was pretty critical of some new episodes that she had seen. Scott, I know you listened to that interview. But it's got to be tough for a show that was fresh in its time to come back in a different America. But what do you think, knowing what you've seen before, Kate?
I think it's going to do fine. I think that it might get into the people are having too high of an expectation for it. I think that if it sticks within its originality of the show of kind of taking pop culture and things, cultural references. The show was always very timely.
Very political, too.
Yeah, very timely and very political. So if they stick to that environment, people may not like it, that format, and it may not work. But I feel like if they're going to stick to the integrity of the show, they should stick to that.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, does it get buried? I remember that when Will and Grace came out, there was, what, four networks. Internet was pretty nascent. You know, there's no streaming services. There's none of that. So I will say this, part of the reason why it had such an impact was because of the fact that it was on television. Television just had a huge impact. So we talk about TV characters, you know, that was a huge impact in 1998. I mean, there was, you know, barely any internet at the time and people were just starting to get email at the time. Now you're bombarded with just all sorts of choices and you're bombarded with so many, you know, different things that you can watch. I don't think it will have an impact like it did. Whether it's as timely and as funny as it was before, you know, we'll just have to see.
They're going to have to tweak the humor in it because some of what was funny 20 plus years ago isn't necessarily going to be funny in the same way anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, yesterday I also got a notice from Netflix that the next season of Transparent is out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, completely edgy, also fun, but very different show than Will and Grace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting if they, in the future, you know, like as the show goes on, actually started bringing in, because we do have this awesome opportunity right now. There are so many shows with Orange is the New Black and, you know, even Orphan Black and all the other Netflix shows, Transparent, Amazon, like all these other companies that are doing LGBTQI friendly shows. And if they use some of that voice that those shows are getting, mm-hmm. in order to bring their humor and their points across.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just in general, just entertainment value in general. I mean, it's not just in LGBT. It's just the fact of, okay, I've got 1,000 things on.
Yeah.
What am I going to watch? Oh, Will and Grace is back.
So
great.
Much.
I've got to catch up on this, you know. So that's the hard thing now in bringing something back. It's a nostalgia factor,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, the nostalgia factor is only going to take you so far. So it, you know. How good is it going to be? We're going to have to find out.
Paul on Twitter says he was never a fan of the show personally, but this was landmark TV for the mainstream. It humanized some aspects of gay people, but also stereotypes. And he says, compare or contrast with Queer as Folk, later The L Word, and recently Looking and Transparent. I haven't seen Transparent, but everyone keeps bringing it up. So it sounds
Jeffrey
like
Tambor's in it. You have to. Yeah,
that's
really
TV.
Why I
yeah,
watched I it.
Yeah.
And Judith Light's funny as.
Well, but Jeffrey got some of the same mm-hmm. pushback that Eric got for mm-hmm. playing Will. You know,
yep.
I mean, here
mm-hmm.
we have a cisgendered, white, straight man playing a trans woman.
Mm-hmm.
So much like Eric, you know, as a cis, white, straight guy was playing a gay guy. So,
well, Sean Hayes, while he was on the show, he didn't come out while the show was on the air. He came out in 2010, so 4 years after the show's first run. And people were pretty critical of that. And I have a quote from him. And he says, I was so young, it being being on the show made me go back in the closet because I was so overwhelmed at 26 or 27. I didn't want the responsibility. I didn't know how to handle the responsibility of speaking for the gay community. I always felt like I owed them a huge apology for coming out too late. Some people in the gay community were very upset with me for not coming out on their terms. They don't stop to think about what's going on in somebody's personal life and the struggles that they're having. It was all very scary. We got death threats. It was a really tough time for me, but I was also having the time of my life. Do you think gay stars have any responsibility to come out when they're on the air as stars?
I would say no. I mean, I agree with him in that. I agree with him that, you know, there are death threats. You got to think about their personal life, too. It's funny how he actually came out on the show, though. Not him personally. His character actually came out on the show to his mom
and
during the season
run. And we have that clip, Juan.
Thank you. What a great set.
That's called a segue.
Transition. We didn't rehearse this. So let's listen to this scene where Jack is coming out to his mom. And, oh, I should mention also, this is from the Paley Center special. So you'll hear Deborah Messing respond to the clip within the clip itself.
Mom, I'm gay.
Oh.
Mom, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but this is who I am.
You could never disappoint me. I just want you to be happy. Looking back on it, there have been clues.
To then start getting all of the letters from people saying, you're helping my family heal. You're giving me the courage to, you know, come out and be who I really am. Those kind of letters made us realize that the show had social impact, and it wasn't the goal. It just sort of happened.
It's funny how they also did the same thing with Will, too, because they showed that in a flashback when he came out to Grace. And then, you know, she finally told her mom, and, you know, her mom says, hey, I owe you $20, by the way.
Yeah.
That's right, you know.
Yeah, Julius, I owe you $20.
I personally think that they're an actor, they're playing a character. I think it's great when they step up and embody the character and go forth into the community and fight for it. But I kind of agree, like, mm-hmm. at that point, like, It's your decision if you want to do that or not, and to be forced to just because of
right.
that's not your job is to play a character.
Yeah. Well, what about Eric McCormick playing Will? How do you feel about a straight man playing a gay character? There was some criticism of that. Scott, I know you.
Well, again, I think they found the right actor. I think he did a great job. I don't think you necessarily have to be gay to play a gay character. I don't feel in my heart that in 1998 that they purposely went out and said, oh, we can't put a gay person in that role, which might have happened actually years previously, where they might have actually said, oh, no, we can't do that. So I don't think it was malicious. I'm not going to be very articulate about this. I'll disagree a little with my colleagues around the table here. I think that the actors do have a responsibility, maybe not necessarily to come out as an individual, but to come out publicly in their support if they're playing that kind of a role. And so I don't know if that's really a disagreement or not, but, you know, to tell somebody that he has to come out, especially hearing that quote from Sean Hayes there, and some of what they were facing as 26-year-old, that would be an awful lot to put on someone.
Yeah, it's private lives. I mean, yeah. they've got to do their own thing. But you're right. I mean, the support should be there if you're playing the character, but... actually, you coming out yourself, I mean, it's your life, you have your life away from the camera.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like my job.
Yeah.
You know, if I choose to come out as the executive director at the Gay Alliance or not.
Yeah. It's and sometimes it also, when we're talking about straight folks playing gay characters, some of that is also, in a way, casting, too, depending on how they want to cast. It's not gay or straight, per se, but what they're looking for is a certain type of person to play that. That's what casting is.
Right.
And for here too, like they were looking for a certain dynamic mm-hmm. between the cast and you know, between Will and Grace. I mean, that was the most important thing about the show, be it that you know, it's gay best friends or not. I mean, having the chemistry between those two characters had to be there.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, you can join this conversation by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, I have more questions for our panelists and more clips that we can play from some classic sitcoms. And we can decide whether or not they handled certain issues well. And we'll hear more of your feedback via email. It's connections at WXXI.org and also on Twitter. More connections next. I'm Megan Mack. Thursday on The Next Connections, we're talking to winners of the Democratic primary for City Council. They'll be in studio to share their thoughts on the campaign, the election results, and a number of issues that are important to you. Parcel 5, whether or not the Democratic Party can heal, and so much more. Then in our second hour, you probably have heard the Rochester accent. There's a researcher who's studying it. We'll hear all about that Thursday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about the legacy of Will and Grace and if it deserves the credit that it gets for helping to educate the American public about LGBTQ issues. And joining me in studio is Scott Fearing, the executive director of the Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley. When does the name change happen, Scott, or has it? I should have asked you that.
October 11th, National Coming Out Day. We're coming out as the Out Alliance.
Perfect.
So it's starting to show up in a few places, but right now you got it right. It's still the Gay Alliance.
Well, I saw it on your shirt.
Yes.
So the Out Alliance is of October 11th. Also in studio, Juan Vasquez, the digital engagement facilitator, my colleague here at WXXI News. Thanks for joining us, Juan.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for walking down the hall.
Yes.
And Kate Sweeney is the co-organizer of Ambush Rochester. Kate, what's Ambush Rochester?
Ambush Rochester is a monthly lesbian and friends and ally happy hour. We rotate around different bars. We provide a safe community for women to come and connect and network connections or just meeting old friends. Last month I had an ambusher come up and tell me that they had run into a friend they hadn't seen in 20 years. So,
awesome. Where can people find more information?
Ambush Rochester on Facebook. And our next ambush event is at the Park Bench on October 13th from 6 to 9. And we will have a live DJ.
Awesome. Very good. Some feedback about Will and Grace on Twitter. Chris says, the impact of the new Will and Grace will be purely financial, about as interesting as seeing dinosaur rock bands still touring. So not everyone's a fan. He also says, it would be more exciting to see a reunion of Queer as Folk, an edgier and more honest look at gay life, albeit its own flaws. So thoughts about Queer as Folk. That's not a show I pulled a clip from or am very familiar with. So,
well, that started in the year 2000, and it was, I believe, HBO?
Yes, HBO.
Showtime.
Yeah.
Showtime. Yeah, because they were both on Showtime.
Yeah. Yeah, that, and The L Word a couple years later, I think in 2004. But Queer as Folk was definitely edgier, and because it was cable, they could get away with a lot more language and visuals that the broadcast media could not get away with. But basically, it was just a team of gay men. Kind of coming into their own and living in the city.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that the commenter says that was a what would you say about an accurate interpretation?
A reunion of Queer as Folk, an edgier and more honest look at gay life. But he says
funny.
It had its
call
own
it
flaws.
Honest, huh? Okay, I would disagree. I mean, I seriously would. I mean, it's to me, Queer as Folk in a way. Was a little bit more of the, I guess, stereotype that some people don't like when they talk about gay characters on television or when they show maybe their lifestyle a little bit. I thought that show was way too, clubby.
Club and party.
Clubby party, you know, and talked about, sex a lot in that show. And to say that it was an honest representation, I disagree with it.
It was probably honest of a small segment of who we are.
Right.
Well,
right.
I feel like just like Will and Grace, it was a characterization mm-hmm. and an exaggeration of one aspect of the gay lifestyle. Will and Grace was kind of going mm-hmm. with the gay best friend.
Right.
And this was going more with the subculture in the gay community of that went out to clubs and went out partying and drink it, you know, so it's the same, you know,
right.
I feel like holding these shows to try to encompass the group as an entirety.
You can't.
It's not.
It's like saying Duck Dynasty represents everyone who's a hunter.
Yeah.
It is really hard. But maybe it is an honest representation for some, but, you know, for others like myself, no, not even close.
Okay. Roger emailed a comment. He says, as a gay man, I feel we need to address the racism, sexism, and bigotry that exist within our own community. We have no problem criticizing a show like Will and Grace for whatever slight, air quotes, it may have rendered against us, but we don't even want to discuss the shortcomings of our own family. That's from Roger.
I think that's important. I actually have it on my notes here is how very white that show was, the cast was, all the supporting roles. And I do think that if it had been made with a black cast, even in 1998, as it were, it would be a very different show and probably would not have gotten the notoriety that it did. I'm hoping and assuming that in the remake and the relaunch here that they will be diversifying the task and cast and making it look a little more like our community really looks.
Mm-hmm. And part of that also, it's also a sitcom. I mean, it's different from being like a drama, like in a way, you know, Queer as Folk was, The L Word was. So the dynamic is a little bit different in some of the topics that they're actually going to cover too, I feel. Well, if that's on Showtime or HBO or maybe Netflix now, or, you know, maybe those are the topics that they're gonna cover.
Well, and I think what the commenter was saying more was that mm-hmm. within our own community, mm-hmm. outside of the show.
Gotcha.
And that is unfortunately wholeheartedly
yes,
true.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Against all, you know, like at least it is a general because it's all the way across the board. It yep. doesn't matter which group. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their own, you know, there's a segregation within our own community.
Right. The intersectionality is not working well in the community.
Mm-hmm. And those are conversations that we hope to continue to have on the show. We've done a few hours
We've
on that already.
Stuff.
And,
yeah.
And we hope to continue to do that. We often hear from people of color who want to see more performers who look like them on stage, on screen, at the Oscars. What about the gay community? So I'll open this up to all of you. Growing up, did you ever wonder, where are the characters that look like me, that are like me?
Yeah. We talked about this. Megan and I talked about this when you asked me to be on the show. And you said, hey, what were some of the characters that pretty much represented you? And the first one that I thought of was Max from Happy Endings. If I don't know if you both have ever seen that show. Adam Pauly plays the gay character, and he's described as the slovenly, not that I'm saying that my house is a mess, I'm just saying, slovenly, sports-loving, you know, guy, I guess, in a sense. And when I saw his character on ABC and on that show, I went, ah, okay, finally somebody that I could connect with. And that was just me. But there's got to be others where, you know, some may think that, okay, there are going to be characters that I actually connect with, and some that are sitting there going, nope, I haven't seen anybody that reminds me of me yet.
But when was that, Juan? Because that's a more recent show. That wasn't when
was
you were growing up.
That was 2010. 2013, I think, is when it was on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So nothing prior to that?
No, nothing prior to that. At least that I could think of. Mm-hmm. No, there was nothing prior to that.
How about you, Scott?
The first gay character that I could really relate to in a film was actually in Early Frost, Aidan Quinn's character. I mean, I was in college at the time. I was starting to get involved with the arrival of HIV in the community and trying to do some workshops and in-services on some of the early safe sex conversations. And here was this guy who was basically my age going home, coming out, and dealing with this disease. Now, I was blessed that I didn't have to deal with the disease piece, but his family and his reaction really spoke to me. Previous LGBT characters that I had seen on TV really didn't resonate with me. I mean, Jody from Soap was a curiosity in that he was openly gay.
Was he the first openly gay character on TV?
Of a standing series.
Of a regular
individual in a series, yeah. Mm. You know, and there were, again, other ones prior to that, but for some reason, Aidan Quinn was one that really resonated with me.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Kate?
Actually, it was Ellen, but before her coming out. Because just her personality on the show prior to her coming out, I related to very much. And when Ellen came out, I was actually a senior in high school. And it was kind of a difficult blow to my own, like, kind of finding my own self at that time, that when she did come out, that not only did the community reject her, or the outside, like the whole world community kind of reject her and reject the show, and the show kind of stopped reflecting what I had related to in the first place. For good reason. I mean, she kind of went to where she was like, all right, now I'm in. I'm a lesbian on TV. I'm going to show this story. But unfortunately, America wasn't ready for that story at the time. Mm-hmm. And even me as a young lesbian, like, I couldn't relate to it any longer.
I wonder how Ellen would have reacted, or how, what her career trajectory would have been, or how her personal life would have been, had she not been a comedian too. I wonder if that helped her deal with that rejection in a way, compared to like maybe being an actor or something.
I think it definitely helped, because I think it definitely gave her the ability to kind of make fun at herself and have multiple things to, you know, I mean, she really didn't work for a very long time after the show was canceled. It was her doing her comedy and going back to her comedy that actually, you know, like, saved her career. Because, I mean, after that was over, her career was, you know, like, after Ellen ended and was canceled, you know, Will and Grace ended on its own free will after 8 seasons, but, like, Ellen came out the next year, Ellen was canceled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she went back out on the road doing stand-up and clubs and things like that. I mean, again, when you're looking at the distinction and the difference sort of between visibility of gay and lesbian historically, there were lots of the sort of slapstick characters that we talked about earlier on back in the black and white TV days before remote controls. You know, characters, or people such as Paul Lynde and Charles Nelson Reilly and Wally Cox and Rip Taylor and some of these names, that they were usually, again, slapstick characters who were tossed into a series from Bewitched or the Hollywood Squares or something like that. And they never really came out. But if you were wise enough or on the know, you knew. And the sense of humor was more like spending time with Jack from Will and Grace, right? Because they were very edgy, very campy. But, you know, lesbians had, like, Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot.
out on the Old West. And then Alice on the Brady Bunch, who they eventually gave her a boyfriend just to make sure there was a cover on that. But that was really about it.
Well, and even after Ellen, I mean, until really the L Word came around, there, that was the next and last series that was actually, you know, like, something, a plot that was around the lesbians.
Lesbians, absolutely.
So, I mean, there's a lot. Luckily, I mean, we have lesbians have been depicted across many different storylines. You know, Buffy had that, and obviously we have the Orange is the New Black now, which is, I find the Orange is the New Black very good because it doesn't focus on that. It just happens to be, this is something that happens within this area, but that's not our story.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting when Scott brings up some of the older characters, and you were talking about you know, Charles Nelson Reilly and Paul Lynde, because I'm a game show lover, so I know that stuff. It's funny how the writers wrote around that stuff to make it, you know, if you were in the know, you knew. If you didn't, it just sort of went over your head. But it was always in a comedic way. There was never a drama. There was never a, you know, action or whatever. There was nothing. It was always something comedic. So it's kind of it's surprising how it was always in one genre and never got into,
which
any
was
other
unique
genre.
To TV, because if you look at cinema, it was kind of the exact opposite. I mean, yes, there were the comedic folks in cinema, but it was most often the dramatic character killing themselves or wrestling with mother or being a killer themselves. You know, so you know, the there's the famous one with Dirk Bogarde, and I can't remember the title of the film right now. He's a private detective in London, and he ends up murdering somebody because of his own shame and hating himself for being gay and being attracted to this guy.
Well, we have a question about films that just came in over email from Joel. He says, what are the films that helped, if any? And then he says, and this is a little tough because it's a text message that's been broken up, but the next one says, disproportionate numbers according to what I read in Empty Closet.
Wow, that's really a conversation when Image Out is here next month for their for their film series. There, what films that have helped? Do you guys have any off the top of your head that you can throw out there?
I will say that I sought out that wasn't something, as far as like when I first came out, I sought out films and they were there. They weren't in the mainstream by any sense of at all. But there were movies like Better Than Chocolate was an excellent movie.
Right.
And that was actually, I saw it at one of my first Image Out festivals. And that depicted two young women kind of falling in love and being together and being in a community where they were accepted, but kind of segregated from the outside world. And how once the outside world came in, how they were able to find that balance between everything, not only their own identity, but also the world around them, and how the rest of the world took them in.
So as far as cinema, the one other one that I would like to mention is the film Boys in the Band.
Excellent film.
Monumental film for when it was made and how, I mean, this was a big Hollywood production focused on, what, six or eight gay men celebrating a birthday party of one of their members. The big challenge that film faced is it was released the week, I believe the week after the Stonewall riots. Mm. And so the film included all sorts of very stereotyped gay behaviors and kind of that a mix between the club scene and the kind of slapstick stuff. And the gay community responded very negatively to the film, and the film got very little play. We're actually going to be doing a screening of it the next month or two here at the Alliance, along with a documentary called Making the Boys, about sort of that background piece of what it took to take this Broadway show, get it onto the big screen, and then once this was supposed to be this big coming out party for the gay community, and it ended up really backfiring on the filmmakers.
Let's talk about a specific plot line from Will and Grace that showed up again and again, and maybe we can talk about how we can compare it to current plot lines and current shows. But it included one about gay men kissing, and Jack made a scene about it during the taping of the Today Show. He said, "When will we finally see gay men kissing on network television?" And then Will kissed Jack, and they saw it on the Today Show. And that kicked off numerous kissing scenes within Will and Grace. How much do you think it mattered that the show decided to normalize kissing between gay people? Because that's not something that we were seeing a lot of before. We're not seeing a lot of it now, I don't think either, but was that a pivotal moment?
When did that happen, though? That's sort of key. Like, I don't remember when it was. I mean, if it was later in the run, I can see.
I think it was in season three.
It was in season three. I mean, it was pretty popular by that point. So, I mean, I can see them taking the risks, just like they took the risk on the show. You know, you might as well take the risk. It's a popular show already. Just do it. I mean, if you try to do it in the first season, okay, maybe not. But, you know, we talked a little bit about Roseanne, too. I mean, that, you know, that kiss didn't happen until, I think, the sixth or seventh season, and the show was still popular, and then it went downhill after that. But still, I guess it's also, in a sense, time. Sometimes we never think about the fact that there's another side to this and the fact of, okay, if we want to do this, when do we do this? Mm-hmm. And there's the aspect of, are we in a position to be able to do this? And chances are in that third season, okay, now they knew that they were going to be able to do this. So let's go ahead and do this and see what the reaction's going to be. Mm-hmm. I think if they did it on any other show that's not Will and Grace, you know, that didn't deal with characters like this, it probably would be a little bit of backlash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially for two men. Mm-hmm. I could see, although, you know, again, I've already pointed out in 96 that Friends wouldn't show the lesbian couple kissing at their wedding. So
right.
That was just, what, 5-6 years prior to that.
Will and Grace also dealt with the opposite. Remember the episode with Matt Damon?
Oh, yes, yeah. Where he was pretending to be gay so he could sing in the gay men's chorus.
Yes.
That was funny. But how do you think we're doing today? So if you're looking at current shows.
I mean, if we're talking specifically about kissing, I feel like we've seen more of two women kissing on television than we have of two men, by a long shot.
Absolutely.
And, you know, from Roseanne, and, you know, like, there's a portion of it that I feel like the audience feels a little more comfortable with the actors they know are straight, that are two straight women kissing, because that's an appeal for some people. And I feel like it's become more of a commonplace, but as far as gay men and gay men showing affection in that way on a day-to-day regular thing, I don't think we see a lot of that today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they even hinted on that on Seinfeld. Remember that episode with Raquel Welch, you know, the cat fight, you know, that was the one where Jerry said, well, in the hope, you know, men like two women fighting in the hopes that they're going to like end up kissing. So it was like this brief touch on it. And that's in the mid 90s. You know, so yeah, I mean, you're right. I think that it's still, you know, more commonplace to see it with two women than you see with two men. I can't even think of another time that it's actually happened.
I can't think of another show that wasn't specifically like Queer as Folk,
right?
Like a specifically gay show where I've seen that happening, where I can think of many examples where I've seen two women kiss on numerous different shows.
Yeah, I'm even running through my mind like Netflix series and things like that.
I can't think of one either.
Hmm. Oh yeah, Frankie, Grace and Frankie.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
Grace
you see that. But again, that's
2015.
Yeah, and that's also those are the two characters too.
Yeah.
What are the biggest barriers, do you think, that we have in terms of this issue and seeing more LGBTQ characters on TV, as normalized as straight characters? What's the biggest challenge that we're facing?
I think it is to make it normalized. I don't because it's not everyone believes that, and so there's always going to be some sort of backlash. And we're getting there, but we're not there yet as far as what the broader society looks at the LGBTQI community.
I think the what I've seen happening more is they're just a character essential in the show, and oh, by the way, they happen to be gay. And I think that that's an important element of where things need to be, that it doesn't have to be the focus of who that character is.
Mm-hmm. My colleague Kat just sent a note through and says Shameless has open male gayness. I haven't seen Shameless either.
Shameless, yeah. I forgot about that. That was a Showtime show.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Good examples.
And they're dealing with a gay character who is bipolar and also joins the military and is quiet about his sexuality while he's in the military, too. So, yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot in that show. And also dealing with a bully who also happens to be gay, too, and is trying to hide that. There's a lot there.
Wow.
So is the most progress going to come from Netflix, Showtime, you know, not broadcast networks?
Probably
Showtime. When will they be more comfortable, do you think, if ever, tackling these bigger issues? Am I too hopeful about network television?
I think you're hopeful on network television.
I was going to say, that's the question. Will network television
In the mid-2000s, it was, you know, queer as folk, the L word, that try to tackle these issues. Those were cable. It's probably going to be the streaming services that will start that mm-hmm. now. You probably won't see it on network TV right now.
I feel like they're better equipped to be able to actually handle the conversation than the limitations that network television brings mm-hmm. in general.
Well, if you do watch network television, you can catch Will and Grace tomorrow night on NBC. I'd like to thank my guests, Scott Fearing, Kate Sweeney, and Juan Vasquez. Also, thanks to our engineer, Rob Braden, Kat Schwartz helping out on phones today. I'm Megan Mack filling in for Evan Dawson. Thanks all for listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.